Curlew in Autumn, a thriller serial for radio in 6 episodes by Edward Boyd, with David Ashton as Peter Kalman. Episode 5. Peter Kalman has established a connection between the death of Nurse Nicholson and the disappearance of Tim Layton. Layton, an old hermit, lived in a cave at Dungrennan Bay, a lonely beach now patrolled by strange guards. Kalman and his friend Police Sergeant Isaiah Dunsmore, helped by Sandy Brill, a local poacher, have decided to investigate.
In Kirkcudbright Graveyard, there is a headstone marking the resting place of William Marshall, who died at the advanced age of 121. Billy Marshall was a tinker, and perhaps his feet had helped to tread the tinker's path we laboured up now. He may even have been the eponymous tinker. The path to the beach was rocky, slippery, designed by mountain goats for mountain goats.
You think this past Sandy Brill's idea a joke?
I'll tell you this for free. Oh, I've got a new respect for tinkers.
Oh, I've passed the worst it now.
I'm beginning to remember this place now.
I thought you would.
It used to be a great place for blueberries.
It still is.
At the top of this stretch, there's a sort of flat bit, right? Then there are 39 steps down to the beach.
I think you're in the wrong story.
It was just talk, a kind of coded courage, a charm against whatever lay ahead, an attempt to diminish it and perhaps to diminish our part in it with bad jokes. So we reached the top of the hill and looked down on the Firth, smooth, silver, treacherous. And the bay swung round suddenly like a left hook, and you could see the atomic power complex all lit up. Dramatic, theatrical, a temple of technology, or possibly a cenotaph.
Impressive, eh?
If you like that kind of thing.
Does that mean you don't?
I can live without it.
A perfect anti-nuclear slogan.
So, what do we do now? Charge downhill shouting Geronimo.
We'll wait for some kind of signal for Sandy.
Did you know this beach was being closed?
No, I didn't.
I find that a bit odd.
Well, there's your signal, Peter.
Hey?
He set the bloody beach on fire.
It was a pardonable exaggeration. Sandy had set alight the dried whin bushes in the marram grass, and the flames rose crackling into the night sky, defining the far end of the bay. And the sands were suddenly filled with running men.
Spectacular, isn't it?
Short-lived too.
Right, come on then.
What goes up must come down, and as a general rule, faster. It took us as many seconds to descend as it had taken minutes to struggle upwards. And then we were on the beach, and heering towards Tim Layton's cave, which looked like a black eye patch against the illuminated face of the cliff. We dived into its darkness, and into the sudden dazzling beam of a torch. Behind the torch was a man, and the man had a gun. To say he was fat is like saying Mount Everest is high. Mirabeau might have been nearer the mark when he said of an acquaintance that God had created him only to show how far the human skin could stretch without bursting.
I'm afraid Mr. Layton is not at home.
I'm afraid we already knew that.
Oh, yes. What are you doing here, Sergeant?
I'm trying to believe my eyes.
That'll be quite enough.
Look, who the hell do you think you are?
I know very well who I am. And so should you, Kalman.
Why?
Because the last time we met, I broke your back.
They still remember it as Kalman's match, and the story has been told ad nauseam of the young Scottish fly-half playing out of his skin, 4 tries in 30 minutes, and the maddened, humiliated English number 10 who finally laid him low with an illegal tackle and kicked him as he lay injured on the ground. That was Kalman's match. And from a reverse, perverse angle, it could be seen as Bullivant's match as well.
No hard feelings, old boy.
Bullivant? I don't believe it.
It was no picnic for me either.
Oh, don't think I don't realise that. I never believe I didn't appreciate it. 2 years in a wheelchair, not knowing if I was ever going to walk again. And the only thing that kept me from total despair was knowing that the sadist who put me in that wheelchair wasn't having a picnic either.
Do you know what it's like to be a pariah?
Peter's never earned the right to wear that badge.
I'll deal with you later, Sergeant.
Why wait till later?
You're suspended from duty.
By whose authority?
Mine.
And what makes you think you possess that kind of authority?
I am head of atomic security for this area.
And what rank does that carry?
Superintendent.
And does that give you the authority to close beaches?
I have very wide discretionary powers.
Well, perhaps it's time we found out how wide they are.
Exactly.
Tell Mr. Layton we're sorry we missed him.
Anything else?
Yes. You're carrying too much beef.
Good night, Superintendent.
We walked away from him and his gun and his 24 inelegant stones of blubber, not looking round in case, like Lot's wife, he might be changed into 336 pounds of rock salt. The men along the beach gave us weird looks that had in them something of respect. It was as though we had encountered some kind of sacred monster and survived. Sandy Brill was waiting up for us. He was wearing black and white striped pyjamas, which belonged in some old American movie set claustrophobically in Alcatraz or San Quentin, or some such further education centre.
I'm sorry to have to say it, but say it I will. Deep inside of me there's a fire raiser struggling to get out.
Oh, you did a grand job.
A piece of cake. How did you two get on?
We ran into the dragon that guards the cave.
Weighed 20 stone plus and not 1 ounce of it hanging properly.
And it carried a gun.
You get caught.
We got caught.
Any sign of Tim Layton?
No. No, the cave was totally empty.
That's odd.
I thought so too.
Do you mean there was nothing in the cave at all?
You wouldn't have known anybody had ever lived in it.
Well, it shouldn't have been empty.
So what should have been there?
Well, there should have been the old rickety bed that I gave him when he was clearing this place out. And then there was a couple of orange boxes that was washed ashore. And then there was a big black plastic bag.
What did he keep in that? His life savings?
Seaweed, that's what he kept in it. The stuff he used to cook. That frog spawn he lived on.
I heard him lock the door behind us as we left and stepped into the moonlight, which seemed to have borrowed the black and white striping of his jailbreak pyjamas. We drove off along the coast road, and at one point we were looking down on the bay. The stretch of sand was covered with little black lowry figures, all active and wise after the event.
That beach is contaminated.
Yep. Nothing else makes sense.
So why all this mystery then?
You're going to be all right.
You mean about this suspension business?
I feel a bit responsible.
Oh, the chief constable will sort Bullivant out. He's as jealous as a robin when it comes to people intruding on his territory. Do you know what I found strange tonight?
What?
You not recognising Bullivant.
Yeah? He must have put on about 10 stone.
It's a whole new concept, isn't it?
Hmm?
Fat as a disguise.
I dropped Dunsmore at his place of work, where Constable Archie Douglas was doubtless still waging his watery war of attrition against helpless pot plants. Someday, I thought, Isaiah was going to buy an enormous Venus flytrap and train it to savage Archie Douglas every time he reached for a watering can. Then I made my way home to find I had a Venus flytrap of my very own. The receptionist from the Spencer Watson Memorial Hospital.
I let myself in.
Oh, be my guest.
I hope you're not angry with me.
I can't answer that until after I've counted the spoons.
Oh, you don't think that I'd...
No. I was joking.
You can search me if you like.
I don't think my hardened arteries could stand it.
Are you gay?
No. Manic depressive.
Oh, you're sending me up.
Wouldn't dream of it. How did you get in here?
Oh, there's a little window at the back of the house. It was open.
That takes care of the how. Now comes the why.
I've got something to sell.
Yeah? You were offering it for nothing a minute ago.
Oh, don't be snide.
Yes, you're right. That was uncalled for.
Oh, well spoken.
And now that we are sweethearts again, tell me what you've got to sell.
Information about the death of Nurse Nicholson.
Oh, you're asking me to be unethical. On the other hand, if I offered a reward for information regarding Nurse Nicholson's death, I would not be buying whatever knowledge you have. I would be simply rewarding your public spirit and coming forward with it.
And both our halos could stay nice and shiny.
Exactly. £100?
I've had my halo valued at 150.
Mm-hmm. But not by me.
All right, then. 100 it is.
You give in very easily.
Your girlfriend would say it's become a habit.
Jenny Oliver is not my girlfriend.
Oh, congratulations.
Tell me something.
Anything that doesn't cost me money.
Why did you panic when you heard the car had been found?
Well, you see, I had signed the car out from the pool for that night.
Did anyone else see you sign it back in?
No.
What happened?
Dr. Weber got very drunk.
Ah. He was with you?
Yes, until he passed out. Then I drove him back to the hospital, and there was a dreary business of getting him smuggled upstairs to his quarters.
And then what?
Well, that took some time, as you can imagine. And when I went to sign the car back in, it had gone.
Someone else had taken it?
Right.
And you've since found out who that someone was?
Right again.
And that is the information you have to sell?
To coin a phrase, yes.
We agreed to meet again, at opening time, which for her had nothing to do with pubs, but everything to do with banking hours. So I took her to the local hotel, left her to its tender mercies, and took the leer off the night clerk's face by walking out shortly afterwards, thus confusing his sordid imagination. Then home through the AM streets, awaiting their daylight fix of carbon monoxide, and so to bed. The morning brought mist and a fine rain, and an unexpected telephone call.
Come out of the closet, Calman.
And face the big, cruel, heterosexual world? Never.
You do realise you're addressing the great Walter Hansford, star of stage and screen.
And not above the odd bar mitzvah.
You're spoiling my image.
I presume you've come up to bury your old man?
How deliciously Freudian you make it sound.
Oh, you're a heartless old queen.
I am indeed. When are you coming to kiss the royal hand?
Lunchtime?
Your place or mine?
Oh, mine.
Wilco and all that first of the few rubbish. About burying the old man. You're invited.
Thank you.
Not at all. An extra spade is always welcome.
They never understood each other, which could perhaps stand as an epitaph for every father and son relationship. Old man Hansford was dour, pragmatic, devious and conservative, the last person ever likely to appreciate the wild anarchic poetry that fueled his son's wild actions and wild attitudes, the last person ever likely to admit that he, alone, was responsible for his son's homosexuality. The last person ever likely to forgive his son's refusal to grant him conditional immortality by carrying on the family name. The trouble with psychoanalysis is that while you're busy sorting out the past, the present keeps on happening.
No mistake, sir, I assure you.
Did you actually see her leave the hotel?
With my own eyes, sir.
Was she alone when she left?
No, she left with a man. A very fat man.
And he settled the bill?
Cash.
Did you get the impression that she was leaving of her own free will?
Well, put it this way, I didn't see any arms being twisted. Have I spoiled your day, Mr. Kelman?
No, not really. Wasn't much of a day anyway. I made my way to the police station to see if Isaiah Dunsmore had survived the night. Archie Douglas seemed in command, but a new Archie, spruced up, pompous. Not any less stupid, merely stupid in a different way. His red face shone with all the pride of conscious worth, unexpectedly recognised.
Morning, Mr. Kalman.
I thought you'd be off duty this morning, Archie.
Us policemen is never off duty.
Policeman's lot is not a happy one.
You've put it in a nutshell.
Is the sergeant around?
Have you no heard?
Heard what?
He's been suspended.
Oh, yes, I knew that.
Aye, well, you've been a pal of the chief constable.
Chief constable?
He phoned up this morning and told the sergeant he was suspended. What's he been up to, Mr. Kalman?
I think he got in the way of a very fat man.
The chief constable, I thought, had just signed the death warrant of a hapless geranium. The chief constable, I thought, was a time-serving spineless balloon. The chief constable, I thought, was everything that was wrong with Scotland. I went to seek Isaiah Dunsmore and found him in a coffee shop.
Over here, Peter.
How's it going?
It's gone.
I wouldn't say that.
I've already said it. In a lengthy, profane and abusive letter of resignation to the chief constable.
Put not your trust in princes.
God, now you tell me.
Does Jenny know?
No.
I didn't know it until I sat down here, but I've come to offer you a job.
Oh?
Yes, I've been asked to set up a temple of peace.
I'm not very good with doves.
I've got the money all right, there's no problem there. And the problem is the organisation.
And you want me involved?
I want you to run it.
And what about Jenny?
Well, if you think you can handle her.
Could you explain that?
Well, you know Jenny, she'll want to set up a committee, then the committee will set up a steering committee, then she'll fall out with all the committee and the whole project will die of sheer verbiage.
Anything else?
Aye. Every time a war breaks out, it comes off your bonus.
What if somebody presses that famous button?
You get fired with the rest of us.
Nice idea, a temple of peace. Any thoughts on what it should look like?
Only in a negative way.
Does your sponsor, Fräulein von Schellenberg, any views on the subject?
Oh, as far as I know. How did you know her name?
It's a small town, Peter.
I'm getting smaller by the minute.
What's going to happen to that weird old bugger at Noctua?
His name's Shaw.
I'm not sure his name is Shaw.
You have a reason for saying that, presumably?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
You remember that business a while back about the forged Hitler diaries?
Yeah.
Well, I was reading about it in one of the Sundays. And in this article, it gave the telephone number of the records office for the Luftwaffe in Berlin.
Don't tell me. You rang it.
I did. And I got right through to it.
Oh, so much for the taxpayers' money.
If you don't tell a soul, I'll show you how to rig your electricity meter.
It's a deal.
Anyway, I mean, I only rung on a daft impulse. And then I remembered hearing about a German aircraft being brought down hereabouts during the war.
A Junkers 88?
Yeah. So I asked about that.
Brilliant.
They gave me all the information, right down to the pilot's tattoo marks.
Uh-huh.
And there was nobody called Shaw on the crew of that aircraft.
Now, I wonder if Jenny could throw any light on this.
Well, she's meeting me here in 20 minutes. You can ask her yourself.
No. Must rush. I've got a date with a very old friend.
Walter Hansford was sitting behind his late father's desk. He was sipping white wine from a thick white mug, and he looked the very picture of unconventional grief.
Ah, Pietro, cara mia.
Hello, Walter.
You wouldn't have to have a wine glass, would you?
No, I left my wine glasses in my other suit.
Oh, what it is to be rich and have two suits. The mind boggles.
You've started early.
I'm only tasting it for my wine column in the Church of Scotland magazine.
That's blasphemy.
So, dear boys, the wine. Prost.
Do you really feel nothing about your father?
Nothing at all. Absolutely nothing at all.
I'm never quite sure when you're being serious, Walter.
What a terribly wounding thing to say.
You see, I've got a theory about you.
Oh, just what I've always wanted.
Yes, you're one of those people who uses words to conceal and not communicate.
You couldn't be more wrong, Peter. My father was a furtive, vindictive, secretive, envious, slyly lecherous old git.
Did you know he offered to take me into partnership the day he died?
Then you had a narrow escape, dear boy.
So it would appear.
Did you know my father hated your uncle?
Why should he?
I have a fragrant childhood memory of lying awake one night in my little truckle bed, listening to the parents having a real swinging punch up. I think that one ended with her crowning him with a vase of his prize chrysanthemums.
Speed it up, Walter.
I remember hearing your uncle's name being mentioned in the course of the fracas.
Now, you're not suggesting that he was having...
Oh, not in the least. My mother was a dear, dear lady, but she had a face like a failed rice pudding. I've often wondered where I get my looks from.
Estee Lauder, perhaps?
You are a bitch, Peter.
We were talking about my uncle, remember?
Ah, yes. There was a woman's name mentioned, but I can't recall it offhand. I have that kind of memory where women are concerned.
Well, if you do remember it...
Well, you'll be the first to know, dear heart. You'll be the first to know.
I left him sitting behind the desk with his Oedipus complex and his diminishing bottle of white wine. He would be a rich man now, and I wondered what he would do with his new wealth. I wished him luck, and then I thought he didn't really need it. Homosexuals like Walter have to be survivors. I stepped out into the high, bright day and literally bumped into Archie Douglas.
I've been searching all the town for you.
Why?
You're wanted in the station.
I was going for a haircut.
Your hair can wait.
You're drunk with power, Archie.
I'm obeying orders.
From?
Superintendent Bullivant.
He was standing by the window. He seemed to fill the whole room, and he was watering that doomed geranium.
Ah, good day to you, Calman.
You and Archie Douglas are turning that plant into a dipsomaniac.
I thought we should have a little talk.
About what?
About security.
Why?
You seem to hold rather unorthodox views on the subject.
I agree with Harold Macmillan. Security is 60% rubbish.
Possibly. That still leaves 40% that isn't.
Look, I have things to do.
They will have to wait.
You carry things off with a very high hand, Superintendent.
It may seem so.
It damned well is so.
Then let's make it quite clear. I am detaining you under the provisions of the Prevention of Terrorism Act.
In episode 5 of Curlew in Autumn by Edward Boyd, Peter Calman was played by David Ashton. Isaiah Dunsmore was played by Gregor Fisher, Superintendent Bullivant by Arthur Boland, Sandy Brill by Finlay Welsh, Walter Hansford by Ronald Aitken, Constable Archie Douglas by Robert Patterson, and the hospital receptionist by Tamara Kennedy. Curlew in Autumn was directed in our Edinburgh studios by Patrick Rayner.